if we could quiet down. Quiet down. Miss Shannon, are you ready with another door prize? Whoa.
I even have a mic. Look at that.
Yeah. She's ready to go.
All right. Well, it's payday. I feel it says that on all these. I think I should make more candy puns. So let's take five and get $10 cash and some payday candy from Yakima Valley Council of the Blind so that you can be high on sugar for this lovely reading panel that's about to happen. And my high on sugar is Monica Ludlow in the room. Okay, that's a no.
Oh, good. I want it. I like.
Sorry,
paydays.
Monica.
Listen up, guys. You're
okay. How about Jim Turry? Are you in the room?
Yes, he is.
Alrighty, there you go.
I know I want it too. Jim's going to share with all of us up here. All right. Please quiet down. I don't think this group needs sugar. They're ready to go. All right. Did you all know that knowledge is power? You know what? I am so excited about this panel and this topic because I decided a long time ago. I decided a long time ago that you can never have enough books. No matter how many you have, my husband accuses me all the time. He goes, "You will never, ever read all the books you have." And I said, "That's okay, because you can never have too many." But with the advent of alternatives and additions to the Library of Congress materials on BARD, there are many other sources where we can obtain books and magazines, which we're going to learn about this morning. So to moderate this panel and introduce the panelists, please help me welcome Jim Turry, WCB board member from Whatcom County.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's
hi.
So, hopefully, I'm loud enough. I'm eating the mic. Can you give me a little more gain? I'm eating it, and it tastes pretty good. But the wonderful thing about this subject is that there is getting to be so much available that none of us knows it all, and that's why there's three of us. And so. We've got Alan Benson, who's going to be our resident expert. You know, he works for the library, right? And we moved here 6 years ago, and he was the person that I dealt with when I wanted to change my library membership from Maryland to Washington State. And he had such a positive, can-do attitude, and they did things so much more quickly than back east, and I was just so impressed with, and we took a tour of the library with our chapter. You know, we got a bus and we all came down, and it was just a wonderful experience, and I just have so many good things to say about WTBL. And our other panelist, of course, is Mika White. Yeah. And so she's going to talk about some electronic alternatives, some that are working well and some that are not. So do we still have our full amount of time, or are we going to have to brief anything up?
You got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Alan, and I know he's got He's got lots of material, and so he can speak for about two-thirds of the time, if he has that much, which I think he does, and then we'll continue with our expertise in other areas. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I feel pretty funny with no keyboard in front of me. I'm used to playing the piano or having a computer. You remember talking books? Anybody here remember talking books? Remember when they came in those 33 and a third RPM records?
Yeah.
In those big black boxes, and they were brought by the postman, maybe, and remember when they were this big, spooky, mysterious thing that only blind people knew about? And who else would ever want one? And you remember all that? And life has changed. I hate to break the news to you. But audiobooks are now a very present form of entertainment in the public marketplace. They're embraced by all kinds of people. You don't have to be blind or handicapped in any way to enjoy audiobooks. And that's good, and it's bad for us. And one of the bad things about it is that you really do have to become invested in technology now to be a talking book user, which is can be expensive. But it does mean that technology is no longer just something that's relegated to maybe being a student or a work-related thing. It brings technology into our lives in a very meaningful, day-to-day, important way. I will just briefly outline. In my mind, there are six major sources and, of course, many minor sources of audiobooks besides good old WTBBL. And I urge you all to get on BARD. How many here are on BARD? All right. Well, I'm not going to waste any time preaching to the choir, but do use your download, because BARD is a national treasure. You have never had as good access to the NLS collection ever as you do right this moment. Okay, so the second thing is audible.com. Yes, it costs money, but it's an incredible source of audiobooks. And you know, the kick against NLS and the other libraries has been, I can't get the bestsellers when everybody else is talking about them. You now can get an audio bestseller, and many other famous books from the famous publishers on the day they come out. So the third source is Bookshare. Yep. Another kick against NLS has been, oh, I can't get all the good old books. Well, believe me, Bookshare has more of those good old books than you can really shake a stick at, and they're growing all the time, and I feel they're pretty easy to use. So also, Audible is easy to use. You can call them up, and they'll install it for you. I mean, how many websites will do that? You know, and so I highly recommend both those sources. Learning Ally is still in business, but they're mostly download. I don't think Learning Ally provides anything as an appliance book either, but their books are a lot more easier to get than when I was in college, and they all came in those awful cardboard boxes on the little 5-inch reel-to-reel tape. So they've certainly made great strides. Another major source is the Kindle. Denise just kind of offhandedly. And actually, my New Year's resolution is to put KFPC on my phone and start using Kindle. But good. I will probably recruit you. Denise just kind of offhandedly said at our last chapter meeting, "Oh, I get all my books on Kindle now." So you know, it's a great text-to-speech alternative, as well as Bookshare. By the way, all you people who think text-to-speech is really boring should definitely check out the Voice Dream app.
Yeah.
And it's probably some of the best money you'll ever spend. I never used to think what voice it was speaking mattered when it came to text-to-speech. But boy, have they put a lot of thought into their speaking voices, and it just makes text-to-speech so painless. It's great. The sixth source I would like to mention is books from your public library. It's an incredibly great source of audiobooks now. Again, mostly as downloads. And I'm going to have ask Misha to talk about that. But one more thing I want to tell you is that a lot of the old mainline services that have assisted NLS forever have successfully made the digital transition. Yes, we have seen some agencies go under, but a lot of agencies such as Christian Record Services, Jewish Braille Institute, Xavier Society, and our own Tape Ministries Northwest here in Seattle do provide books on cartridges for people, and Hadley School for the Blind has their materials on cartridge. So people are making this transition. Any agency you've ever used to use, call them up and find out if they've got digital books. And now here's Misha to talk about the public library.
Sorry, Alan. I almost knocked Alan over to do so. Let me tell you, I got so excited. All right. I'm just trying to raise this thing. I'm struggling. Okay. So good morning, WCB. One really quick thing I wanted to mention, Alan, can y'all hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so Alan did mention, he talked about the Kindle. I just want to tell you a couple of real quick things. If you buy your books on Kindle, oftentimes there will be a matching audiobook price or lower. So you might buy a book and then it might say, add audio for $5.99. I don't know about y'all, but I can't think of one audiobook of great length that I can get for $5.99. So sometimes it's really worth doing that. I'm here to talk to you about OverDrive. So OverDrive is an app that you go, so you have to go to your public library and get your library card, and then you put in your information, and then you have like an access to so many books because of OverDrive. So you are able to, you're able to go to your library's website using OverDrive. You can get however many libraries you happen to have cards for. I just have one for King County Library, and that's enough for me for right now. So you can go through like different books and things like that. You can go through different lists of books, and you can either download them audibly. And when you download them, I think you have 21 days to read them. And you can either renew for another 21 days, or if you don't read them, they go back into the queue. You might be placed on hold for that book. And then you'll eventually get that book. You'll get a little email that says, you are now, the book has been downloaded. It's time for you can go read it now. So that's awesome. Oftentimes with new releases, when they come out, I actually put my name out for a book that I thought was already out. It was not out yet, and I was 99 in the queue, and I forgot that I was 99 in the queue, so I just went and bought the book when it came out, and then like a few months later, there was this note that there it was available. So you can read them via like audibly. So if you like audiobooks, you can read them through the OverDrive app, or my personal favorite, because now I'm more of a text-to-speech reader than I am an audio reader, or narrated, human voice reader, I guess. So you can actually get those books, and you can send your OverDrive library book to your Kindle app and read them that way. How many of you knew about that?
Yes.
Yeah, it is I will be here this whole convention. Y'all can come find me in hospitality. All right, so it's really exciting. So I do want to just say that with the expansion of digital access also comes the deeper need to advocate for things to be made accessible.
Yeah.
So, with that said, OverDrive will tell you, don't use our app. You'll have a better experience using Libby. So then you go to Libby. You open up Libby, and Libby says, this is a secret message for people using screen readers. We are working on the app to make it more accessible, and we will continue to do so. Well, honey, they've been continuing to do so for 3 years. So there is no, and I have written to the developers about that, because OverDrive is not necessarily the easiest app. It is doable, but it can be frustrating. But to be frankly honest, when you are making an app in the digital landscape, it is your responsibility to make that app accessible so that it is inclusive to all. Don't hurt the tables. and then I didn't realize the importance of our public libraries. So if anyone ever wants to hear me get in a tear on that, let me know. But public libraries are really very important. And I think that it just expands what we have now. It just expands to greater levels of access. And what a time to be able to read all of these things that we want, because there is absolutely no better feeling than when a book comes out. You don't have to wait 2 years. You don't have to wait 2 months. You don't even have to wait 2 days. You can get it when it's out. So thank you.
Okay. So there's talking about the Kindle. Of course, I know a lot of us have been using it, and I've got about 3 or 4 Amazon tablets on my bedside table because I've, you know, getting updated and get it. And my son got me one for Christmas, and so. I'm hoping that Android is going to improve, because when you want to read at higher speed, sometimes reading a Kindle book does not work very well. However, if you use the Kindle app on your Apple iPhone, you've known that works very well. And I have one question for the audience. I have not updated to the latest Mac operating system just yet. So has anyone successfully used Kindle on the Mac yet? I was afraid of that. So hopefully next year we'll have a very positive report about that. And one thing I just discovered this morning is that even if you're away from your Echo, you know that Kindle books can be read with your Amazon Echo Dot or whatever Echo you have. And I thought, well, what happens if I get on Alexa on the iPhone? And I got on my Alexa, and sure enough, it started reading my Kindle book to me in that nice, relaxing Amazon Echo voice. And I thought that was wonderful.
Do you think that'll give you better navigation, Jim, on the iPhone? I mean, the problem with Alexa right now is that there's no navigation, you know?
Well, the Kindle app on the iPhone gives you great navigation. There's, you go into what do they call it? A control panel or some name, I can't. Yeah, navigation. And then you can go into the table of contents. It shows you each chapter number. You find the chapter number you want, double tap it, and you go right there. Or you can do the percentage thing, you know, how many percent of the book do I want to tap on. And so that works very well. A couple other things I wanted to touch on. I know we're short on time.
No, you're good.
Okay. Okay. There's a couple other alternatives. Talking about older books. Project Gutenberg. Are you all familiar with that? Yeah. ProjectGutenberg.org. And I tested it. I said, are they still up? Yeah, they're still up. And my church choir director didn't know about it. And so he said, I love all these old science fiction books. So, yeah. So lots of information available there. There's another computer app called Open Libra. Open Library. OpenLibrary.org. And I tested that out to make sure that it was still working, because I hadn't used it for a few. And it's still there, and it still works great. There's another one. Where'd it go? Okay, I'll have to get back to that one. But then there's one I just discovered. You know, there's a lot of apps, a lot of podcasts you can go to now that And one podcast, it's called Clark's World Magazine Podcast. If you like science fiction, there's a lovely lady reader, and apparently she's got hundreds of these podcasts. So it's like you go to the podcast, and you've got a book available that you can read. If you're into scanning print books, you can go to Paperback Swap, and it's basically you just have to pay for the shipping of the book, and people swap them back and forth. I'm hoping to hear more from, you know, when Danielle talks about how are we doing with library sharing, because a lot of people read books from Australia, for example, the Visual Australia program. They've got lots of things. So there's just so many things out there. Bookshare, of course. So I think I've pretty much exhausted the ones I had for right now. Does anybody have any questions for us all?
I do.
Terry.
Okay. I love audio.
Hold on. I have the floor, I think. What about accessing ebooks, the different formats like EPUB and Mobi, and I know there are several others. Are there any ways to access those types of books? I know there's a plugin in Firefox that's supposed to help you access EPUB books, but I haven't tried it to see if it actually works.
Hey, believe it or not, your stream will read EPUB. I didn't know that, but I've tried it, and it seems to read...
What will?
The Victor Reader stream.
It will?
If you have one of those, you can load the EPUB file down there, and at least the ones that I had, it was reading that, along with Daisy books. Like if you download a book from Bookshare, I used to download them in the Braille format. Now I've been using the Daisy text format, and it uses the internal voice of the stream and reads very well. Here's my other library, public library thing. LibriVox, LibriVox, and it's volunteer readers that read a lot of the public domain classics, and they do a really nice job also. Okay, next question.
Okay, this is Debbie Phillips, and I love audiobooks, and I read, I have cartridges, I read books on my phone, but I haven't heard too much about Braille, and... I do download books from Bookshare and read them in Braille, but when is NLS coming out with the Braille reader, and are there other places that you can download Braille? Thank you.
Do you want to talk about that, Alan?
Yeah, you better ask Danielle.
That's a Danielle question.
Okay. This is Danielle. I'm going to talk about the Braille reader coming up.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, other questions? Go.
Hang on a minute.
No.
They'll get you a mic.
He's coming with the microphone, Ollie. He's
coming. Go ahead.
Oh, he just brought me the microphone. This is Joanne Hunter. Probably everybody else in this room knows the answer to this. I have an Echo Dot, and I listen to music on it. And I download books onto my iPad and listen to them. How do I connect my Echo to a book someplace?
Bluetooth. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Bluetooth.
Does everybody else know how to do that?
Well, talk to some of us after the... It's a little involved, but it's certainly easy to be done.
Kindle and Audible are both Amazon products, so you can listen to
hello.
Them.
Yeah. I have a question. So, you mentioned the Kindle book and then the Echo and the smart speaker piece, but... And then I also thought I heard that navigation wasn't available on the smart speaker. Is that what I heard?
Well,
and if it is available, how do you use it?
If you want to contradict me, go for it.
What I'm asking is, can you navigate from your smart speaker using Kindle?
That's what he's saying, is to...
I heard him click.
You can to a certain extent. I think Debbie knows more about that.
Yeah, but you can't do full navigation, no. Full navigation is not implemented yet.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Here's another source of cheap audio books, audiochirpbooks.com. And if you get on their website and you get their newsletter, each day they have a discounted book that's like $2, $3, maybe up to $5, and then they have other ones you can look at. So audiochirp.com, it's very similar to Audible books. You download the app, you get the book, and it reads you in nice, clear, good-sounding audio. So that's another one. Audiochirpbooks.com.
This is Holly Turry.
Yes.
Somebody else is going to talk over me, so I figure I better go right now. I was going to mention that I was silly a couple of years ago, and I actually paid for great courses. They're wonderful. They're taught by professors of colleges, and you can learn about anything. Your library has them. You don't have to pay for them.
And Amazon has them.
What?
Amazon has them, too, on your Kindle mostly for free.
Yes. So I just didn't want anybody to make the mistake I did and go out and buy them, because you don't have to.
You can say it's a mistake that you bought them. However, as we're trying to point out, there's access problems with some of these public library sources, whereas the Audible books are very accessible and very navigable. So, you know, it's all a matter of your priorities.
Okay, so we're pointing out tips here. I wanted to look up some stuff in Robert's Rules of Order the other day. And you can download it from Bard and read it, you know, Audible. But what I did was I downloaded the Braille version to my stream. Now you can search and you can spell terms on your stream.
Okay. I think that's about the last question. But thank you all for your time.
Tour prize.
Not quite yet.
You know, there's another source nobody mentioned. Barnes & Noble's Nook app.
And iBooks.
Oh, yeah, and iBooks. Yep. All right. Now to another panel. Now to another panel that we always enjoy having every year to talk to us about what's happening with our three agencies for the blind. And to bring us updates, you guys, could you please take conversations outside? This is really hard. Let's see, who should I pick on first?
Yeah, I know, you're all here. I'm debating.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be really strange, and I'm going to let the gentleman go first this year. So please help me welcome Scott McCallum, superintendent of the Washington State School for the Blind.
Well, I got to adjust this mic. That mic is horrible. Let's see here. All right. Well, hello, everybody. It's so great to be back here at the Washington Council of the Blind convention among so many friends and acquaintances. As was mentioned, my name is Scott McCallum. I'm one of those people who is in their dream job, and so I have the incredible honor and privilege of serving as the superintendent of the Washington State School for the Blind. I want to make sure to offer my appreciation for council members who are directly involved with the school right now, and I know many of you may have been in the past, but I'd like to recognize and thank our Board of Trustees members, Reg George, who represents Congressional District 4, Burl Cawley, who's not here, but he represents Congressional District 10, and then we have a special seat for WCB and on the ex officio board, and Jolene Ferguson represents all of you. I want to thank you all for your dedication, time, and feedback. We appreciate you so, so much. So last year when I was here with all of you, we were in the midst of a very challenging circumstance at the school. And I'm not going to go into the details of that, but I want to assure you that that matter has reached conclusion. And was handled, thank you, and was handled with the utmost care and compassion by all of our staff. Out of those challenging circumstances, many improvements have been made at WSSB. We were successful in garnering the support of the governor and legislature in hiring a licensed clinical social worker to work alongside our school counselor, our school psychologist, and staff to more thoroughly and appropriately serve the social, emotional, and mental health needs of all of our students. We've implemented a comprehensive social-emotional learning curriculum with all students who attend WSSB and have seen the positive impact it has made for our students and the culture on our campus. And I know some of you students are in the room. You can attest to that. Thank you. We've made many major safety improvements on our campus through continued updates to our electronic door locking systems, the installation of a campus-wide emergency communication system that is accessible to persons with both vision and hearing loss. We are currently adding a visitor management system to our campus, as well as that runs immediate background checks on those individuals from databases from all 50 states. Most school districts down in Clark County actually have this same system. That system's called Raptor. It uses state and federal IDs to run these 50 state database scans. So next time you're all in Clark County or down in Vancouver and you come to visit the school, please bring your ID. It'll be very important. Unrelated to safety, we've made attempts to lower our carbon footprint through the addition of our third and largest solar application. We are lowering our utilities bill by about one-third with that application. It sits on top of our Irwin building. We're also in the beginning of the process of updating all of our lighting to LED, adjustable LED lighting. And so that will further lower our carbon footprint. And then we've established a campus-wide green team to aid in this effort and have explored opportunity for our campus to become salmon safe. Enrollment on campus is continually increasing, which is a really wonderful situation that we're in. It's leading to near capacity in some of our cottages, which are going to be undergoing some updates this summer, beginning with some kitchen remodels. I don't know if you students know that, but those kitchens are going to be remodeled this summer. Yes, it's about time. In addition to that, we're constantly evaluating and improving our programs, our comprehensive middle school and high school programs that we offer. We also offer short courses that are operated throughout the school year, and those are organized and facilitated by a really wonderful teacher. Many of you may know him. His name is Jeff Bowler. Yay, Jeff! Oh, good. You do know him. Through our on-campus programs, we continue to offer online coursework in math and computer science that are open to students across the country. And speaking of computer science, we continue to be the only school for the blind in the country that offers an advanced placement computer science principles course. This is something that not even our neighbor school across the street has done, and so we're pretty proud of that effort. Our outreach programs continue to grow, and we now have hired our third early intervention visual impairment specialist to provide those appropriate services to families in their homes. In this case, we're expanding to the Snohomish County area. On the horizon, we're moving towards the design phase of adding a new facility to our campus to better meet the needs of transition-age students and young adults who participate in our LIFT program, which we offer with our wonderful partners from DSB. We're hoping to provide a new home for LIFT and DSB in this new building, allowing for the expansion and improvement of the LIFT transition program while dedicating over 2,000 square feet to DSB and their clients. With our partners at the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, that's OSPI, and the Center for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Youth, we're beginning to explore working towards a more comprehensive, coordinated, state-funded outreach service model. Something similar to those regional programs that are in states like Oregon, Utah, and Arizona. We're also launching into the update of our strategic plan, so we will be calling on the council for your feedback, and so please help us with that very, very important work. As always, and it's such a pleasure this year to be back with you, if you're ever down in Vancouver, please stop by the school. We have a beautiful, beautiful campus. We love showing it off. We have amazing programs. We have amazing students that we'd like to introduce you to. So please make the effort to come visit. I'll welcome you. I'll give you a personal tour and show off our wonderful gem that is the Washington State School for the Blind. Thank you all, and have a wonderful day.
Wow, he talks fast. All right. Next, please help me welcome Luoma Durand, Director of the Washington State Department of Services for the Blind.
Thanks, Denise. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
You know, this is a really high energy convention. I mean, the energy is in the air. And I have to say, I love the theme, community. As I've been sitting here and thinking about the people in the room, just how connected we all are. I mean, I know that many of you have been customers of Services for the Blind in the past, maybe, or maybe you're a customer now. Many of you have been on the DSB team as employees, maybe in the past, but maybe you're on the team now. Many of you have served as leaders on our state advisory council, either in the past or maybe you're on the council now. So we're all so connected, but just so you know sort of who's currently involved with DSB amongst you, I would like to invite, and this is, there are little two parts to this, all the current DSB staff to stand up, plus the any current council members who are here. And then when I say now, then make the noise of your choice. But first stand up so you guys know who's in the room. Kind of. Okay. Okay, great. Noise of your choice. Okay. All right, now. And that's just who's here now. I mean, I could ask, you know, previous people, you know, people who were previously involved in those ways to stand up too, but then it'd be the whole room probably anyway. So I just want to say I so appreciate the spirit and the culture of this organization. I so appreciate the how you guys give your energy to supporting and encouraging others. And also, like Crystal was saying in her presentation this morning, the experience of being blind or visually impaired is so diverse. And that's so why I so love hearing the individual stories. And I loved hearing Ricardo talk this morning because And you know, we didn't know he, I mean, some of us didn't know how funny he is. So, Ricardo, now you can't, you know, now we know. I mean, excuse me, Roberto. I apologize. You can feel free to say my name wrong, you guys, because people always do. Anyway, you know, I think there are a lot of us in the room who are getting older. We're kind of aging out. Should I ask those guys to stand up and make a noise? No. Anyway, but what's exciting, though, is that are the youth that this organization is supporting. And I'm really excited that we're able to partner with WCB this year for the youth sessions that are happening. And so we have Orientation and Training Center students who are here, too. I don't know if they're in the room. They're probably, some of them might be in that youth session, but anyway, our youth programs are strong and growing, and we have an absolute fabulous partner in Scott and the School for the Blind, and he's already mentioned part of that, but I want to give a shout out to you, Scott, too. I was recently at it's called a Results Washington meeting in Olympia with the governor and a lot of policy people and other agency directors and some of the public, televised by TVW, and Scott presented. And Scott, you were so articulate. You were such an articulate advocate for the potential and capacities of blind youth, as well as really making a case for the need for more trained teachers of the visually impaired. So he did a fabulous job. It's a great voice for our community. So our youth programs, like I mentioned, this summer we had in our Yes To program, that's where we had 33 students living on the University of Washington campus for 6 weeks, going to work in a wide variety of jobs with a diverse range of employers. For a lot of these kids, this is the first time they'd ever lived away from home. Maybe they were opening their first bank account. They were traveling to and from their jobs. They were doing their own laundry, having to shop and plan meals and cook. They were having adventures, taking risks, sometimes getting into a little trouble and making mistakes, but, you know, learning from all of that. And then we had 18 students in our Vancouver Yes One program that we collaborate with at the school, having different kinds of fabulous sort of career exploration experiences down there. And then we have also had our on-campus college preparation bridge and SWAG programs. I have this feeling I'm going to get all my acronyms and names wrong today. But anyway, these students have had a chance to have work experience while getting ready for college as well. We've conducted our skills workshops around the state and our assistive technology open houses and workshops. I'm really pleased that DSB is somewhat unique in the nation in terms of vocational rehabilitation agencies who have convinced the feds to allow us to use, to put in our state plan and use our resources, some of our voc rehab resources, to serve youth under the age of 14. We're very pleased about that because we know how important it is to start as early as possible exposing youth to our kids and their families to what's possible and to the world of work. Independent living is for our customers who are not on an employment track. Most of them are over the age of 55, but not all of them. We've had a little bit of a rocky time in that program recently due to some roller coaster and uncertain funding. Also, those of you who might be familiar with Site Connections in King County, served a lot of our customers, closed. So the last months and this last year, we've been kind of scrambling to reinfuse the program with resources and to stabilize and to figure out how we're going to fill in the gap that Site Connections left, et cetera. As you guys all know, the independent living population, especially the older population, is growing. They're still underserved. The needs, how we would like to serve them, we still don't have the capacity to do. Just now, this is not exactly a money problem at the moment. It's more of a service delivery capacity. So our strategic priority right now is to try to grow our qualified providers around the state. One of the reasons why we are able to stabilize our resources right now is that we were successful with the legislature for getting an increase in state funding for the first time in many years in this last budget cycle for independent living. That's been really helpful, and we've pulled in some other resources as they become available as well. One of the things we also hope to do is improve the quality of our independent living services, making them more robust. We would like to do more for this population with assistive technology. We would like to do more around orientation and mobility services, so that's kind of our goal. And I'm really pleased that our Rehab Council and a number of our stakeholders have gathered together to strategize, to sort of take a long-term strategic view of what the community and the agency might do together to improve these services. And one of the first tasks that this group has taken on is to gather data that really clearly illustrates the need, the unmet need and the gaps, and also demonstrate the benefit of the services and how it impacts lives in families, communities, and in the public system. So vocational rehabilitation, that's our employment track program, and most of you probably know that in October of 2018, because of changes in the law and the way our funding structure changed in voc rehab, we needed to implement a waiting list. And in federal law, that's called an order of selection, because we didn't have enough resources to serve every single person who was coming through our door at the same time. And the federal government requires us to work with stakeholders and get input on how to prioritize how we'll operate that waiting list, which we did. And so since then, we have been doing everything we can to generate additional resources and to, as those resources become available, move people off of the waiting list into active statuses, status and into active employment plans. So the good news is that we just now we have, well, no, the very good news is last budget cycle, when we, at the same time that we got the increase in state funding for independent living, we also got an increase in state funding for vocational rehabilitation. That allowed us to go back to the feds and say, hey, we've got this state money. The federal government doesn't give you federal money unless you've got a certain percentage of state money, in this case 20% to 80% federal. You can't capture the federal funds unless you have that money. But we got the state money, so we went back and we got federal reallotment one-time-only funds. So now we are taking people off the waiting list as quickly as we can, which relates to the capacity of our staff to do the correct process with, or the appropriate process with people as rapidly as they can. So we are hoping by the end of the year to basically have everyone off the waiting list and to go back to resuming the normal, timely process of service delivery. That doesn't mean that we don't have to be very strategic for the future. This is not a long-term fix, but it's, but we're being as creative as we can now. And for people who remain on the waiting list, we're trying to give them as much support as we can by referring them to community resources, inviting them to our open houses and workshops that are open to the public, et cetera. Now, here's a fun part of this. Every year we publish our list of successful employment outcomes, jobs and employers, and that's available on our website. And this last year, there weren't as many of those jobs because of the waiting, I mean, those outcomes because of the waiting list. But just to give you a little flavor, to tantalize you to go look at the website, the average wage per hour of the successful outcomes was about $24 an hour. And who was it earlier this morning that said you're never too old for a job? Who said that? Oh, Cindy Van Winkle. Okay. Anyway, just to tell you of a few of our older successful employment outcomes, we had a 91-year-old complete voc rehab as a psychologist, an 83-year-old complete their program as a successful nursing assistant, an 80-year-old chief executive in a plumbing business, a 73-year-old marriage and family therapist. And on the young side, we had a 19-year-old electromechanical equipment assembler, and we had four 22-year-olds, a library worker, a customer service representative, a freight stock and materials handler, and a janitor. So there are lots of others. I'm not trying to overlook the middle-aged. So, you know, you guys can go look up those jobs. I don't think we put the ages on our website, though, but I just want to tell you about that. Okay, so other news, we've had a lot of turnover, staffing turnover at DSB. We had retirements and different things going on, and a lot of new folks. And we think it is really important when we're when we have new employees to encourage them to connect with consumer groups. We always want them to get out to your convention and meet you all. And also, we expect them to spend time in as though they were a student in the orientation and training center. One of the most significant retirements we've had recently is Julie Brannon, our beloved Julie. Julie has been such a bright spirit, such a role model, and such an ambassador for the OTC. She was pivotal in helping us with our legislative, and the whole OTC was, with our success with the legislature. The legislative budget staff people came and spent some time in the OTC, and then it was like, wow, they were very impressed, and they became really strong advocates for us, so that was powerful. We are excited because we have welcomed our new OTC manager, Deja Powell. She's here. And I think it's wonderful because she and Julie are having time to spend together for a smooth transition and to transfer as much knowledge back and forth. And we're really grateful that that could happen that way. We also have a new manager in our business enterprise program, Jim Hemmen, excuse me, and he has hit the ground running, too. There's never a dull moment in BEP. So what about the future? I think that we really, really need to think about, well, maybe it's just because of my age and everything, but we have to think about how we're going to engage and inspire our youth to start taking on these leadership roles. We've had such strong leaders in this organization over the years who have given so much time over the years. And now I'm excited for everything that we're all going to do together to get those new leaders coming up through the community. Coming up through the community, through the organization, and through the consumer organizations, and through our agencies, because we're all part of that community. And so thanks for your energy. And speaking of energy, I wish I had Danielle's energy. She's one of those high-energy people I know. Thank you.
Thank you, Luoma. We don't want to hear any more about books and libraries, do we? Absolutely. If we didn't get to hear from this lady every year, I don't know. Please help me welcome Danielle Miller, director. Not manager anymore, director and regional librarian for the Washington Talking Book and Braille Library.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am so glad to be here. I look forward to this convention every year, and it's so delightful to be with all of you. And how about that panel on books? That was great. As a librarian, I couldn't agree more, and I am just such an advocate for you getting books everywhere you can and getting as many books as you can. And of course, I want to tell you about what's going on at the library. I'm going to start with things going on at the National Library Service for the blind and print disabled. Yes. I have to get used to saying that. That's going to be my first point. If you haven't heard, the name changed on October 1st. NLS is now the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled, but thankfully, we can still say NLS. So the acronym has not changed. So things going on at NLS, I will first update you on the Braille e-readers. Last year, I mentioned that might be happening. It is going to be happening. NLS and Wetabal will be circulating Braille e-readers to our Braille library patrons, which is very exciting. Yes. So this will be a reality. The NLS pilot will be starting in spring of 2020. So what's happening now, there are two devices that are going to be involved in the pilot, one manufactured by Humanware and one manufactured by ZoomMax. So right now, this fall, NLS is testing the proposed hardware and software for both units, and they're selecting libraries to participate in the pilot. And believe me, I have made known to NLS in every way possible that we want to be one of the pilot libraries. And so keep your fingers crossed for us. We have a good track record, and we are, you know, in good favor with NLS. So hopefully we will be chosen as a pilot library. They'll be notifying libraries by the end of the year, and then that pilot would start in spring of 2020. And what the pilot will be testing is how the players actually get distributed, how that works, getting back and forth to patrons, how patrons are actually working with the devices, and getting feedback from pilot patrons. So stay tuned. I hope to have more information by the end of the year about the pilot situation. So another development going on is the next generation digital talking book player. That is the player that will be a smaller device, something about the size of a cell phone, and will have voice user interface. So you can talk to your player and tell it what book you want and how you want it to work with you. And it will have built-in wireless connectivity. So we'll be able to digitally distribute books to you. So you could talk to Alan on the phone or Shannon and say, I want this book. And they could just go poof and send it right to your player. So NLS just signed a contract for testing, really, for proof of concept testing with a company called Real Sam. This is a company in Australia. So testing to see if this device is going to work, and this is the type of device we want, is going on right now. And they're going to do some field testing with focus groups in the spring of 2020 with this device to see how people work with the voice user interface, to test speaker quality, to test how much tech support somebody would need with a device like this. So that's underway, and we're still looking at probably about 5 years until we have a device like this in your hands. But I'll keep you posted on this, and I did, you know, basically yell from the top of my lungs, if we can have any focus group testing out here, please count us in. So again, fingers crossed for that. Another pilot that's going on, this is just a pilot in two states, in Texas and Pennsylvania, is a small pilot that actually increases the ability of certifiers. So you know there's an application for service, and this is for certifying patrons with reading disabilities. Right now, for someone to get service with a reading disability, it has to be a medical doctor to certify the application. And that's a barrier for a lot of people. So right now, in those two states, it actually expands the certifier to include certified reading specialists and superintendents, which is fantastic. So this pilot is going to go on for a little while. They're going to see how this works, how many more patrons it brings in, and it's also testing it as a BARD-only pilot. So I'm hoping that we get good data from this, and this will expand to be a nationwide new policy with expanded certification for patrons with reading disabilities. And last on the NLS front is the Marrakesh Treaty. And yes, so that, if you recall, or if it's new to anybody, is an international copyright agreement that allows for the exchange of books in accessible formats between countries who have ratified on the treaty. The United States was the 50th country to ratify on the treaty, and the treaty went live in the United States on May 8th. And we have this now, the Marrakesh Treaty Implementation Act, as our copyright agreement, which allows us to produce our books. And right now, the NLS has a law in place that doesn't allow them to distribute their books internationally. So we're working on getting a change in legislation right now. So at the moment, we're not allowed to distribute our books to other countries. So hopefully that law will change very soon. When it does, we'll be working on policies and procedures to be able to send our books to other countries who are ratified under Marrakesh. When we do, it will be books that are in digital format already, so basically the contents of BARD, which will include our locally produced books, because Wetabal is considered an authorized entity under Marrakesh. And we'll be able to be getting books from other countries, which will increase the foreign language access, and even other books in English, like Australia, like somebody mentioned. And currently, the NLS Foreign Language Librarian is acquiring more books in foreign languages and from other countries right now. So things are moving along. We're not able to do it this moment, but things are moving ahead at good speed. So now for Wotabl updates. We've been doing a lot of work on our facility. We also just finished an LED lighting upgrade, so that was great. We put in new carpet. We updated our network wiring, and we totally rearranged our public space, did new bookshelves, we reorganized, and we got new furniture for our public area, a nice sitting area. It's really beautiful, open, and welcoming, and I would invite you to come in and visit. Make yourself welcome. I think it's really important to be proud of the library and know what a welcoming space it is, and you can feel really good not only about the service but about the physical facility and take pride in your library, and I'd love to have you come in. In our audiobook production department, we continue to do all we can to add more books to the collection, both in Wotabl and nationally, increasing access to materials. To that end, we have been doing a major upgrade to the audiobook production department. We added 2 more recording booths, getting us up to 11 recording studios. So we've got a lot of booths. We were getting at critical mass with our narrators and our reviewers. So we've got 2 more booths. We're replacing all our computers with new computers, Windows 10. We're updating and replacing our recording and editing software to SoundForge Pro 13. And we replaced our final post-production software, or the software that lets us put in the navigation so you can move through the book, with a software called Hindenburg ABC. And that has greatly reduced our post-production time and made it much more efficient. So we're able to get through the final work on books much, much more quickly. And in fiscal year 2019, ending this past June, we had 333 books in process and produced 156 new books, added 107 converted older books to Bard, and since just July, we added 104 more converted older books, and we have 339 that are just about finished. So we're really making significant contributions of audiobooks there. In our Braille department, not too shabby either, we got a great new acquisition that we love. We bought a high-capacity scanner, and with the scanner, what we're able to do is really increase our Braille production and do some very cool things. A 300-page print book might take us 6 months to transcribe into Braille, but in less than an hour, we can scan that book. We have a volunteer scan it, and we do optical character recognition and export that into a text file. And then that volunteer will go through the text file and do some editing, because, of course, you get a little gunk when you scan it. It's not perfect. So we get the best text file we can, and then in our Braille software, it just takes seconds to turn that into a Braille file. And then we give that Braille file to one of our transcribers. They then again go through, make any corrections. They do some of the great talented work of a transcriber, do the formatting, maybe create the title page, or anything else that needs to be done. And then very quickly, we have a Braille book that we can give to our proofreaders and add it to Bard and add it to the collection. So we're increasing our volume of Braille production with the help of this scanner. We're also able to do some cool things, like really quickly get Harry Potter into UEB, which hasn't been in the collection in UEB. We also, with the scanner, we're able to produce things in text-to-speech. It will produce text-to-speech files. We had a student who couldn't get a book they needed for school anywhere, and we were able to really quickly get a text-to-speech version of that book for them. So it's coming in handy in a number of ways. Also, the Braille department has not been sitting on its laurels in fiscal year 2019. They had 61 books in process, completed 73 new youth Braille books, and uploaded 35 new Braille books to Bard. and something in the pilot department that we're hoping to do, hopefully January or soon thereafter, is we're going to offer a pilot of 50 Bookshare memberships to patrons. Well, I'm not offering it at this moment. But we're going to give it a try. So I have a contract with our contracts department. So we're working through that with Bookshare. And what we'll do, we'll have to do a pre-assessment and a post-assessment, see how this goes. People will will need to be able to be self-sufficient with their membership. We'll be able to offer some support, but you'll need to largely manage it on your own. It'll be on a first-come, first-serve basis. We'll send out a notice on our patron listserv, so you'll need to be there. You'll need to be able to access that by email. And we'll be working through how we're going to launch this. So I'm working through the contract process. It's been fairly successful in the other states that are offering Bookshare to their patrons, which are New York, Georgia, California, Alabama, and Pennsylvania right now. So we're going to give this a go. We didn't have very much budget to do it right now, so we're starting with 50 memberships, and we'll see how it works for a year. Bookshare is free to students, so we'll also have codes to give to students. The way it would work is we get codes for Bookshare, and for those 50 patrons, we would give them a Wittable code, and then they would sign up for Bookshare with that. So I'm excited to be able to give that a try and offer it to a number of patrons. Our youth services department has also been very busy and growing and doing great and creative things, including regular visits to the School for the Blind, which is a great partnership we have with them. We did our summer reading program again, which we do every year. And one of the things that's been really important to us is trying to really walk the talk of being a statewide program. In addition to having the weekly by-mail packets and events at the library in Seattle, we held a nature walk in Yakima and held an alien-themed escape room in Spokane at the public library. So we're trying to get around the state. And Erin, our youth librarian, really is one of the creators of accessible escape rooms. And she's getting invited to do those a lot and teach other people how to create them. So it's a really cool thing that she's got going on. We've continued to do our pen pal program, which is really popular. We have a multi-sensory story time at the library on Fridays, and it's become so popular that we had to add a second one. So we have one in the morning, and we have one in the afternoon, and we get stroller traffic jams at the library. It's really a problem, and strollers these days are huge. I don't know if you've seen them, but they take up a lot of space. We also are launching a teen advisory board. And we have three committed teens right now and several that are interested. And we have a founding president who happens to be in the room here, Luke Uniak, who is very motivated to get this great teen advisory board going. And they are going to meet regularly and communicate through an accessible online platform called Slack that we have a membership to. And they have great plans of things to be doing and giving great feedback and advice to the library. And we're going to be doing the Braille Challenge again. Yay. We'll be having the Braille Challenge in Seattle, but we'll also be having one in Eastern Washington. We're going to be doing it in Cheney, right by Spokane. And this is thanks to one of our PAC members, John Buckmaster, who is a school library media specialist, who was able to offer his middle school to us. So we really appreciate him doing that. We've also continued to do significant outreach. Lots of outreach to our older adults. Our librarian, Amy Ravenholt, has been on the road day in and day out. We've been doing a big push to care facilities and retirement homes. She's been visiting town after town after town. And we have a new RAC card that we've created that we're going to be doing a big mailing with and a big push with that. We also continue to do a lot of outreach to the Hispanic and Latino community. And Erin is doing a lot with the youth as well. So we're really trying to get out there and hit the pavement and get the word out about the library. We're also trying to continue to build community and have things going on at the library, more events. We're teaching our Braille transcription class again. and that's going on. We had a Touch of Braille class, which was an intro to tactile Braille, and had great attendance at that. We're going to offer it again in February, and we're considering offering a tactile Braille reading class at the library. We also offer a bi-monthly low-vision yoga class, and the attendance is growing for that, and it's really nice to have something physical and really engaging people at the library, and I'm really happy to be doing that. We're also looking at launching a quarterly book club next year, and we'll have that. People will be able to attend either online or by phone or at the library. So we're really trying to continue to be having a lot going on and looking for ways to engage library patrons and stakeholders. So I encourage you to be in touch. Be in touch with me, call me or email me or come visit and let me know how we can keep improving your library service and share any ideas for what we can be doing. I would love to hear from you. So thank you very much.
Well, you guys are so good, we even have time for questions. So if you have a question, please stand and wave. So do we have a mic runner? Do we have somebody who can run the mic?
Yep.
Hello? Okay, there we go. This is Katie Frederick, actually, from Ohio. I would just love to connect with the person who spoke about Washington State's Voc Rehab and also the Talking Book library person, if it would be possible for us to connect after the session. Thank you.
Thanks, Katie.
Hi, this is Sarah Edick, and I have questions for all three people. First of all, Danielle, I'm disappointed that you did not mention that NLS has an autographed autobiography by Todd Rundgren. And also, I want to be signed up for that program, the program with the Braille devices, because of my hearing impairment.
Sarah, could you keep... Okay. We need our questions to be general.
Okay. And for the other folks, for the School for the Blind and the Department of Services for the Blind, for both of you, we have a homeless crisis, and I'm wondering how aware your students are of that. And second of all, for the Department of Services for the Blind, I'm a member of an independent program called New Freedom, and we lost a lot when we lost site connections. And I want to know if you guys are working on setting up a program to improve that, because, you know, I really like New Freedom, and I don't want to lose that.
Who would like to take?
Go ahead. Yeah, it's on. Okay, this is Luoma at Services for the Blind. In relation to the closure of site connections, I meant to mention this when I was talking before, but we are working with the Lighthouse for the Blind now in terms of they are gearing up to provide those kinds of in-home services for our independent living customers. And so they're just gearing up for that, and we will be able to kind of replace that capacity. I don't know if they're going to be able to do everything that Site Connections used to do for the independent living population, but we're working on developing those services with them.
This is Scott from the School for the Blind. I'm not sure I totally understood the question related to the homeless crisis, but we do have students who experience homelessness that attend the school, and I think one of the greatest things that we're able to provide is a stable living environment for them, at least Sunday through Friday, so with all their meals and everything included.
Another question?
This is Darlene, I just lost my thought.
Well, then let's go on.
I have to get back to you
all
later.
Right. Okay.
Sorry.
Another question?
I had a question for the library service.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any way that we would be able to use that book reader or to print off Braille materials? Like, My son was in Boy Scouts, and I had to take him out because it was just not inclusive. Then he joined Civil Air Patrol. It's inclusive, but all the manuals that he's required to read and memorize are not in Braille, and I need to somehow get these manuals into Braille. Is there any way to get, like, you know, the leadership book into a Braille format so he can have access to it?
So the Braille reader itself, you would need an embosser and you'd need a Braille file. So the refreshable Braille display, you would just be reading the Braille on. Our scanner. I'm so sorry. Yes, if it's not available, we could possibly produce the manual for you. Is your son a patron of the library?
Oh, I think he is.
Well,
yes.
We can talk.
Yes, he is.
Yeah,
we can
talk.
Oh, hi. I have a question regarding DSB, the services, but also the library. I know there can be, say, mixing of public and private funds, but as far as possibilities, as far as for funding, has there been the possibility as far as having like a corporations or corporate gifts or found some kind of foundations where they would contribute to funds or to like causes such as the library or the like the Department of Services for the Blind Pride, you know, for maybe certain particular services. Like a partnership.
Okay, I can. Do you want?
Yeah.
I'll.
Go ahead, Danielle.
At the library, we do a lot of fundraising, and some of our programs are paid completely with gift funds. Our youth services program is 100% funded by donations, for example. So we rely heavily on fundraising and gift funds. So not a lot of it comes from corporations. It's actually largely from patrons and friends and families of patrons. And so the support we receive is just amazing, and we are so thankful for it. And so much of what we do is made possible by support from people like you and from our patrons, that it's just astonishing the support we receive. And we have thought about and are considering, you know, looking further for grants and corporate support in other areas, because it does definitely expand the potential of what we can do.
Loma, do you want to add anything?
Sure. Yeah, we do receive some donations at Services for the Blind, private donations, but we don't do fundraising per se, because we would have to establish a private nonprofit arm or foundation, which would technically is called a 501c3, and we don't have that in place. And I don't know if you want to speak to that in relation to School for the Blind Scout or not. I mean,
okay. We do actually have a 501c3 that was connected to the school. It used to be called the Washington State School for the Blind Foundation. It's now the Pacific Foundation for Blind Children. And so when we get any sort of donations, we direct them to that entity. It keeps it separate from our state funding and allows a little bit more flexibility and use for those funds. And they have their own board of directors that that control those funds, and I advise that board.
Just for transparency, I want to add that we have a 501c3 foundation called the Heritage Center Board of Trust as well. So it's not coming into our state funds. And there's a board that oversees that I work with as well.
Okay, my question is for Department Services for the Blind and the waiting list for new clients. Is that waiting list based on need, or just based on your spot in line for the waiting list?
It's based on what are called priority categories. And I should probably have Michael describe this better at it, but we did work with stakeholders and our rehab council and so on to define these categories. The law requires us to define the categories. And it's based on not the nature of the disability, but the functional limitations. In other words, you might be totally blind, but already very proficient with technology. You might even, you know, have a degree, you know, a master's degree or something like that. And so you wouldn't have as great a need for our services as someone who perhaps has even more vision, but a lot of more functional limitations, if that makes any sense. So our highest category or priority is for people with at least two functional limitations. Oh, Michael's saying three. Okay. Three functional limitations. That's our top category. If you are in a job and your job, maybe you have a change in vision or there's something, happening on the job that is creating a barrier to your success on the job, we can consider you in that top category as well, because we think it's really important to help people stay on the job and help employers retain qualified employees. So there are two other categories. The second one is, Michael, two functional limitations, and the third one is just everybody else, you know, that might come to us who might be eligible. So I don't know if that helps. It's a little bureaucratic, but
yeah. Any other questions?
I don't see any.
All right. Well, Danielle, Luoma, Scott, thank you again so much. Anybody want a door prize? Yeah, we'll get to announcements in just a minute. I haven't forgotten.
Okay, well, let's see. What other candy-related puns do I have? I just really want to make you all snicker. Yeah, that's all I got. So,
you got one fan.
This is, again, it's payday, $10 and some candy from the Yakima.
Oh, I want that.
Valley Council of the Blind. And our winner today is, or for this one, is Brandon Shotwell. Are you in the room? All right.
Okay. How about one more?
Oh, one more. Yeah. All right, well, since we have exhausted all of my candy puns, we got another one. More. Oh, this one doesn't say. Oh, it does say it's payday. All right. Same deal. Some candy and $10 cash from the Yakima Valley Council of the Blind. I really appreciate that they've labeled their door prizes in Braille. It's made my life wonderful. And that winner is Malia Daly. Are you in the room?
Is she in the room?
She's
in the youth program. So we'll give it to her because she's in the youth program.
All right. Excellent.
You have announcements?
I do.
Okay, I'm going to let Cindy make her announcements, and then if you have announcements, please stand and be ready to give them.
Okay, I'm going to be quick. If Rhonda Nelson, Mike Edwards, and Maria, I can never say your last name, Bachinka, your T-shirts are waiting for you at registration. So before going to lunch, please go get them, because people are not going to be at registration after when lunch starts. The other one is really one I don't like to have to mention, but I'm going to because I'm frustrated. If you are not paid for full registration or registered for our convention, please do not go into our meals. They cost a lot of money. And everyone here that is going into them and wearing their tags and they have the red dot on them, they paid a lot of money to be here. And so, you know, I've had a few people come up to me letting me know of someone who's come for breakfast both mornings. And I suspect somebody in the convention knows that, right? So somebody knows that person. And it just makes me really sad. So we need to all, we have somebody that's going around trying to look at everybody. But, you know, when you have 150 or more people, it's a lot of people. So I just ask that you all help us police that. That was it on that regard. What? Sarah, then I suggest you go out to registration and find out about it. I know nothing about it. I was... Okay. I have been told that there are 3 t-shirts out at registration. I named the people. That's all I know. That's the end. All right. Lunch is in Grand 3. And our guide dog users is in Cascade 5 and 6. All right. That's all I have. Thanks.
What time is no, it? Not yet. We're not dismissed yet. Okay. Who else has announcements?
This is Lisa. I'm your fundraiser coordinator, if you remember. And I want to say that the fundraising room is next door in Grand 2. It is not open right now, but it will be open tonight from 5 to 7. You don't get to go into social hour till 6, so come see me at 5 o'clock. We've got a multi-raffle, and instead of 5, which I thought, we have 10 prize packages. And there's 45 silent auction items. So if you didn't think that you had a good chance with the multi-raffle last year, come and look at the silent auction items this year, because there's lots of good things that are still there. And they start out cheap, you know. But it's all for fundraising. It's all for our convention. The convention costs are half or double of what the registration brings in. So when you register for convention, you only pay half of what it really costs to do the convention. So this fundraiser is our chance to give a little bit. Everybody give a little bit, and it makes a difference. Okay? Thank you.
Other announcements? Other announcements, quickly?
Yeah, I have a quick one. The 50-50 and the raffle for our cards for South Kitsap Council of the Blind. I have to have them by lunch, I was told, and so they will not be sold at the banquet. So if you want one, see me by lunch.
Okay. Anything else? Get to a microphone.
Coming. She's always at a hard to find place. Doreen, I'm back here. I'm coming. Not easy to reach.
No, I'm sorry. So I have been collecting sort of anecdotal data about questions about housing and homelessness issues. Our chapter president, Daryl Roberts, is getting a lot of calls. Sarah's talking about the situation in Tacoma. I think it would be good if the crisis committee and the advocacy committee can put our heads together and just come up with some strategies. First of all, just to count the number of calls we get about it, and then to think about how we can refer people to resources.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Doreen.
And thank you to Scott for mentioning that there are students at the school experiencing homelessness, because that's a reality and a very sad one.
Okay, are there any other questions? I mean, any other announcements?
Madam President?
Yes.
Okay. I'm Amy Laurie. I'm Hildesheim from the Yakima Council of the Blind, and I just want to remind everybody at hospitality tonight, we're still having the hospitality jail. So you still have time to buy your get-out-of-jail-free cards for $5, because once we go into hospitality, you can't get those anymore. And this is a fundraiser that half of the money goes to WCB and half of it goes to the Yakima Council of the Blind. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
If you have an announcement, please stand up and wave so Bruce can get to you.
Coming.
Julie, you have one?
Just to remind people, we'd love to have you join us. I don't know if Kim is in the room, Kim Moberg, but for the scholarship reception, to meet the scholarship winners, learn more about them. It starts at 5, a little earlier than normal. Please join us.
Thank you.
I don't remember where it is.
It's in Cascades 9 and 10, where hospitality is. Anything else?
Coming.
Also, we are selling coffee beans, Pierce County Association of the Blind. We will be in hospitality, and we're here in the building. So on break time or something, I'll be asking if anybody wants some coffee beans. And you can get 12 coffee beans for $1 or a bag for $5.
Great. Thank you, Kathy. All right. So we are going to recess for lunch. The business meeting will begin promptly at 1:30. Please be in the room. Have fun at lunch.